If you want to get paid and you go to a bank and you want someone to wire you money and you say to the bank, hey guys, I want a bank account. They say, oh, we trust you. We know who you are. We're going to open a bank account, right? Nah. Bankers know what they're doing. They're going to say, hey guys, we need to know who you are. And we need to know that you're a good actor. Give us your ID. And then you open up a bank account and they know who you are. And that's how you get paid. You want to open up a PayPal account or they need to know who you are. KYC, know your customer, KYB, know your business, right? You cannot open a bank account in America without them checking out your paperwork. So I thought to myself, okay, now we have TaylorSwift.music, right? Whatever artist.music, which is unique across the world and it's global. Then you can attach their ISNI number and every single identification to them, and then you can attach all the copyright under those.
Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Konstantin Rozsis, founder and CEO of the .music top-level domain name. Konstantin is a Greek Cypriot musician, songwriter, producer, engineer, and entrepreneur whose dream of having a .music domain name put him up against some of the most powerful tech companies in the world. As you'll hear, he was able to persevere and eventually garner the support from the largest music coalition ever assembled, with members representing over 95% of global music consumed. Konstantin has an interesting background, initially becoming a Cypriot Green Beret out of school, which unbelievably led to joining the military band. He later earned a bachelor's degree in business entrepreneurship and a minor in music industry at the University of Southern California before continuing his education at Musicians Institute in Hollywood, becoming a certified music sound engineer. Then, off to Pepperdine University, where he earned his MBA. His last educational journey was graduating from Harvard Business School's prestigious Owner-President Management Program. During the interview, we talked about how top-level domains work, why Facebook's initial startup plan was brilliant, being a Cypriot Green Beret, why online privacy and verification are so important for musicians, and much more. I spoke with Konstantin from his home in Los Angeles. All right, so let's start with your background, because it looks pretty interesting. You've been into a lot of things as well as music. So just give me a rundown.
All right. So where do I start? So I was born and raised in Cyprus, so the island. So I'm Greek Cypriot. So after high school, I went to the military. It's a mandatory nearly 2.5 year service. And I went into the Green Berets, believe it or not, special forces. So remember, I was 18 back then. So what do I know, right? So, you know, let me just go to one of the most dangerous bodies and be cool, right? So that's how I started. My journey with music actually began while I was in the military, believe it or not, the last year of it. They were looking for a marching band drummer, right? So when the presidents of different countries would come to Cyprus, we would have what we call the military band go to the airport and play the national anthem of Cyprus, which is the Greek national anthem, and then play the national anthem of, you know, the country whose president was visiting, right? So, and I met a lot of amazing musicians there. A lot of them went to Berkeley after that. And it was quite amazing. Really, really talented musicians. And I did learn a lot of things. And before that, I was in a band, actually. I was a singer in a band. And believe it or not, my father was a professional jazz musician. He played the sax. And he never wanted me to become a musician, right? So there were two things that I wanted to be when I was a teenager, right? I wanted to be a rock star and I wanted to be a professional football player, like a soccer player, right? My favorite player was Diego Maradona, who passed away a few years ago. And again, my father was like, oh, I don't want him to become a professional football player or a musician. It kind of sucks to be a musician. So, and again, my father eventually became a businessman after being a musician. And did not want me to become a musician, but it's in the blood. What can I say? So I became a singer in a band, right? So that was quite amazing. And again, went to the military, got my ass kicked there. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should try to see if I can get into this military band in the last year or so. And I was pretty okay at the drums, so I impressed the person there that was recruiting, and I was the first Green Beret commando, believe it or not, that was in the military band. And then back then, it wasn't a professional. They wouldn't pay. We got paid a month, believe it or not, less than $20 a month, right? Huh. And, you know, Cyprus is divided. The north is Turkish occupied. So it wasn't a funny thing, right? But what do I know? I was 18 years old. I want to be a badass. So yeah, I want to go be a commando or a Green Beret and wake up in the morning and run, you know, 10 miles. Anyway, so after that, my journey brought me to Southern California, right? So I had a passion for business and a passion for music. So USC for me was the answer to that. So I went there and I went to the entrepreneur program there and also at the music program at Thornton School of Music. And I did music business and I was a bit underwhelmed because we had all these great Grammy award-winning engineers and they wouldn't let us touch the board, right? So SSL boards and, you know, Neve board. And I'm like, oh, I want to touch the board. And it was all theory. And I was like dying to record music, right? Let me record bands, you know, the music blood is still in me. So after I graduated, I was like, oh man, I need to put theory into practice, right? So then I was like, okay, maybe I should go to Musicians Institute and learn recording engineering, right? So I went to the RIT program there, and that was like, again, amazing. It was all, you know, all day I was with musicians, and that was a lot of fun. I got to use the SSL board and the Neve board, and I was like, wow, this is so cool, you know? And I started learning about microphones and which microphones to use and electronics and wow, this is like stuff that, you know, if you're not doing it hands-on, forget about it. All theory is not going to work, right? So, and I remember reading your books as well. You had some books, quite a few books actually, that were really good. I really, really enjoyed them. And, you know, and that's when I started, you know, getting into Pro Tools and all these plugins. I was like, wow, this is great. I mean, if you fast forward to today, you're like, holy crap, those plugins are so much better today. Yeah. Can't imagine what I can do with them nowadays. And like everyone's, you know, saying like music is hard and I'm like, it's so much easier to record music nowadays. It sounds so much better. The plugins are ridiculous. Like I heard some cello sound the other day and it was just incredible. It was done on a MIDI keyboard.
Yeah, libraries are a lot better these days. Yeah. That's for
sure. Amazing, amazing stuff. Back then, you know, I recorded a song with a cello and I brought in, you know, a cello player, right? And they were amazing, but, you know, recording a cello is not that easy. So,
no.
And recording the drums, obviously. So that was like, you know, a big eye opener for me for music. And it was like the early days of MySpace. I don't know if you remember MySpace. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to reveal our ages here. But yeah, MySpace was big for music. And it was quite a great time back then. And I really liked the fact that they would allow you to create your profile and you could edit it. And the problem with MySpace was it lacked this authenticity and trust, right? So I remember I did a funny case study on Paris Hilton, right? And she had 100 accounts on MySpace. Obviously, it wasn't her, right?
Yeah.
So it was it was someone pretending to be Paris Hilton. And then, you know, I started my first business with another Greek friend of mine out of USC. He went to pre-med, straight A student at pre-med. He became a doctor and ultimately did not do anything with medicine in the end because he had a passion for printer ink, right? So I started this ink refill company. So because we saw there was a gap in the marketplace where it would cost you so much money to get a cartridge, right? So the printer was cheap, and then you want to buy a black cartridge or a color cartridge. Those were just as expensive as the printer, right? So it's like, okay, why don't we refill them with ink? So that was the business model. And then that's when I learned search engine optimization. So that was quite important. And then I got to thinking about, okay, affiliate marketing. So affiliate marketing was like, how do you rank for keywords and sell any product? So I sold like hundreds and hundreds of products, right? And I even got chased by UGG Australia. It was bought by an American company called Deckers, and I beat them in the search engines, right? And I remember it was Christmas time, you know, close to Christmas time, which is when the big sales happen. And they were very upset that I was beating them in the search results. And they sent me a cease and desist. And it was, a trademark infringement on your domain name. Then I was thinking, these domain names, there's such a thing as a UDRP. It was called a dispute resolution online. So if you had a domain name that had the name of the brand in there, then you're kind of in trouble. The problem is I disclosed this because I'm selling their product. You're right. And I'm an affiliate. And I went through a company called Zappos, right? So Zappos, and they started out of it was a Sequoia Capital funded one that got bought by Amazon at the end. And I was looking at the two offers through Commission Junction. So Commission Junction is where you can become an affiliate, right? I don't know what it's called today, but so Zappos gave a deal that was unfreaking believable, right? It was 15% commission. Deckers, I remember, would give like 7%. Then they would do this thing called 365-day return policy, right? Which is crazy. Like, and I got into these shoes called UGG, right? And I know this has nothing to do with music, but I'll get there. So I was living in downtown LA by FIDM, the fashion school. And I had a lot of female students where I lived, right? So in my building, and they were like, UGG boots are going to be huge. I'm like, they're so ugly. Like, trust me, they're going to be big. So I was like, okay. I went on this affiliate program with Zappos with this amazing deal. And I started creating a page for UGG boots. And I created like individual pages because, you know, I started learning search engine optimization through the refill company where we ranked, cartridge numbers and printer numbers and created thousands of pages with them. And I did the same with UGG. And I hit the top of the search results, right? For all these shoes that they had. And I was making a killing. And obviously, UGG Australia was making a killing as well. But they were upset that I was beating them in the search results, right? So I get this cease and desist letter. And basically, they were like, we're going to file a UDRP, a dispute resolution. But I disclosed to you guys that I'm your affiliate and I'm using this domain name, right? And I'm only selling your product and it's a real product. And I remember their attorney was like, but you can't have a website that ranks above us. That's not cool.
Yeah, I'm like, right, but, of course.
You know, go talk to the search engines. Why is it my fault? Anyway, so ultimately we did a deal and, you know, I gave them their domain back. And then I started thinking about, okay, so if I do exact match domain names, so let's say if you were like a movies.com or something that had the keyword in the domain name, it would rank really well in the search results because people would link to it as the domain name dot whatever it is, right? .com or whatever it is. And it would tell the search engines, hey, for that keyword, you would rank high. So I thought to myself, wow, this is amazing. And
Wait, before you go any further. So did you have uggs.com? Is that
no,
it?
No, uggs.net. Uggs.net. Because I just went on GoDaddy and I was like, and again, this was like a long time ago, right? And I was like, I'm going to make money for these people. And I made them a crap load of money. It's just, they were pissed. I was like, why is this kid, this Greek dude, like at the top of the search results come Christmas, right?
So
I was like, maybe I created great pages with great content, right? And again, it's the same with music and everything. You got to have great content, you know? And I really, really, really paid attention to each page and each shoe, right? So I optimized the description, the photographs. I went full in with UGGs, right? So and I looked at their official page and I was like, I can make a better, you know, it could look better on my landing page, right? Then I optimized every single shoe, every single, you know, model, everything, right? So I dissected it like a doctor, right? And it worked, and it worked with a whole thousands of other affiliate programs that I did. Okay, the problem with that, and again, I'm going to go back to social media with this, is I could never capture the email of the buyer, right? And that is like, you know, a big boo-boo in on the internet, right? Because Google went public after that, right? And guess what happened? They started promoting non-commercial websites, right? And they started promoting news. They started promoting anything that was not commercial because they wanted the commercial people to pay for ads, right? So then came AdWords, right? So everyone that was being cool with search engine optimization and was being very commercial dropped in the search results. And that was like, yeah, it was a crazy time. But again, you know, when you're talking about Google, they got to make money. That's their business model. And it's fully understandable, right? And they're doing the same thing now. But the difference in now is they're promoting their own properties, right? But that's another conversation. So back to the email thing. So I was the second biggest guy on MySpace, believe it or not. I had over 4 million followers on there. It was called Friends back then. And I figured out how their algorithm worked, right? And back then they had a directory, right? And I was thinking about this dot music thing back then, right? And I was like, okay, we need to launch this top level domain, maybe, and I want to get to the artist. So my target customer was the artist, right? So MySpace made it easy because you could go and search for the artist in their directory by country, which is amazing. Like that was one of the best things I've ever seen, where you can find artists from a specific country and they could list them. I thought that was, wow, that's great. And they changed the way that their templates worked. Remember when you add a friend back then, I think it was a friend, you would have to accept a friend, right? And for bands, and this is the hack, it was auto-accept, right? So the band didn't have to accept. So, you know, I had these big bands like Metallica. They're not going to go one by one accept the fan, right? So that was the hack. So what I did was I created a program where basically, okay, and the other thing that was really important was I was one of the first accounts at MySpace, right? So the founders at MySpace were some guys from USC, right? So, and Tom Anderson, who was from UCLA, believe it or not. And the way that they ranked the friends, if you remember, you in the beginning, it wouldn't rank them, but that you can sort them by your top 10 friends. If you remember, this guy's going to be my number one friend, number two friend. And people would get upset if you didn't put them as number one. Like, I'm not your best friend. Mm-hmm. Why am I not number one? Right. So what would happen if you didn't sort them, they would sort you according to the day that you created your account. Right. So I had one of the first accounts. So I would always be number one in the friends lists. Right. Always number one. So that was the first hack. I had an account that was one of the first accounts. I remember it was 123. I remember it was one of those. And then when a band would add me, guess who would be number one on their friends list if they wasn't sorted? Yours truly. Right. They did was you could only add like 400 or 500 a day. Right. They had a cap on how many bands you could add or whatnot. So I created this software where every day I ranked. So I took the entire, I sorted all the bands based on popularity, you know, number of followers, number of friends. And then I started following them, right? And then automatically people would see my name and they would follow me back. So it's at some point it hit a threshold and a tipping point. I reached over 4 million, right?
That's
and
amazing.
99% of them were musicians, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's two stories here that are really important. The first story is email, right? And email is important because in the affiliate thing that I did, I lost every single customer. They were gone. I had no idea who they were. They went to, you know, Australia, and Australia kept the customer, right? I had no clue who they were. So creating an email list is like really, really, really important, right? And again, with Facebook later, that became really important. And I'll get to that as well. So secondly, social media, right? Where's MySpace today? It's not around, right? Do you remember, Vine? Right. Remember Vine?
Yeah.
Vine was huge. Yep. And then something became, you know, TikTok, you know, they were ahead of their time. And,
And
it gets you thinking, like, we're reliant on these social networks. One day they may change their policies. And I remember Facebook pages. This was all the rage, Facebook pages. And all of a sudden, Facebook decides to change their policy. And they're like, oh, you need to, people that are going to, you know, follow you on your pages are not going to get your updates. You got to pay to play. You got to advertise. And then they created the news feed. And that was game over, right? It was based on... You know, controversy and number of likes and number of comments and there you have it. That's an issue, right? So the first thing, email is important. Secondly, social media could go away the next day. So what's your goal? And And there you have it.
And it's funny you should mention that, because it's one thing I always tell people is that the only thing that you can really control is a website. If you have a website, it's yours. You can control it. You can do whatever. But if you're solely dependent upon any kind of social network, that could change in a blink of an eye, and it does. So, you know, what's the point? You might as well. And then not only that, collecting emails, as you say, which is super important for marketing. Doesn't matter what business
right.
you're in.
And I'll go a step yeah. further. I mean, when you look at the government as well, I mean, a lot of people have been saying, oh, we need to regulate TikTok or ban TikTok altogether, right? And that's kind of, you know, you never know what's going to happen with any, you know, website or app or whatever it is. Sure. I mean, even the European Union, now they're, you know, fighting Google on antitrust. And in the US, it's interesting because at the end of the day, you're the entrepreneur. You need to know who your customer is. And again, just having them as followers on Instagram or TikTok or whatnot is not 100% bulletproof, right? And the corporations and the big tech companies control that conversation. You have no power. They can change policies any day. So anyway, so going back to MySpace, and this is where things got interesting for me. Because back then, we didn't have a Spotify, right? So everyone was on MySpace, and people would use search, right? And there was a lot of piracy. Yep. So piracy was all the rage, right? And this guy called Zuckerberg did something very interesting. He launched this thing called the Facebook, right? And I was a member in the beginning, and it was quite a brilliant strategy. The strategy was screw everyone else in the world. We're going to focus on students in the United States of America. And right. we're going to build this trust that this is the tribe. These are real students. And MySpace, like I said, the 100 Paris Hilton example, right? They have got issues there with trust. However, let's start with the most, you know, epic community in America, right? And again, in the States, you've got the alumni networks, you've got like college football, college basketball. Everyone loves their school, right? There's this passion about, it's not replicated anywhere in the world except the United States of America, right? And something, he discovered the best hack that was ever created. And again, it's 2024, right? And with Dot Music, we're verifying, or may I say, blue check marking everyone, right? Back then, you could not do that unless it was manual. And if you remember with the celebrities on back then, you know, Twitter or Instagram, it was a manual process, right? So I was blue checkmarked on Twitter and Instagram. It took months because it was a manual person taking your driver's license or whatever it is, and you had to meet some threshold, and it was a manual process that took ages. So the genius of Zuckerberg was, okay, how can I guarantee that these are indeed students in universities in the United States of America? And the solution was the .edu email address. Like, it was holy crap. Like, it's so damn simple, right? So this is what he did. He's like, okay, let's start elite. Let's start with the Harvard, right? And he started sending emails, right? So he collected an email list and started doing the emails. And then he would tell them, hey, invite your other college friends. He started with Harvard and it went Ivy League and then it went out to other schools. And the thing is with the .edu and with .edu, there's about 9,000 .edus being used today, right? There's 9,000 universities in America that are there. And again, to have a .edu, you have to meet certain criteria. So you have to be a post-educational, in other words, a university, not a high school, accredited institution with physical presence, right? So, and what happened was the accreditation made it even better, right? So the university had to be accredited. So all the students would go to their school and obviously they would pay tuition, or if they were on a scholarship, someone paid for their tuition, and you would know that they were legit students. And all he did was, hey guys, go verify your .edu email address. Holy crap, it was that simple. Right.
Yeah.
And again, it goes to show the power of email and again, the World Wide Web. And again, the World Wide Web is accessed by everyone on the planet, right? You're not in iOS and locked into the, you know, Apple Store, you know, App Store, or in Google Play with Android. This is the worldwideweb.edu. You can put the URL in your browser and you're there. And again, emails and domain names have been around for like such a long time. And, you know.
Constantine, yeah. I see where you're going here. And I want to just jump ahead to dot music because you're setting the stage completely. And you're also taking up some of the questions that I've had and answering them before I actually asked them to. But let's just go to dot music for a second.
Yeah.
Why did it take so long for that to become a legit domain?
Okay.
There are 15 simple mix fixes that can instantly take your mixes from amateur to pro level. These are the secrets that the top engineers know that most musicians don't. That's what you'll find in my Mix Fix playbook. Head to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now.
So let's talk about regulators, right? So regulators are not known to be fast, right? So in 1998, Bill Clinton and Al Gore created an organization called ICANN, the Internet Corporation of Assigned Names and Numbers, because they saw that this thing called the Internet and the World Wide Web was becoming big, right? And back then, you were able to register three domain names. It was .com, .net, .org, right? And then you had the .com bust of 2000. And there was this thing that was called, you know, websites. And people would really like the websites. And the reason why they're important, and again, you're going to see how it connects with music. And I'm going to tell you a number. 142, 250, 189, 238. So if you go on your browser and you type in 142 period 250 period 189 period 238, that's an IP address, right? That's google.com, right? That's the IP address of Google. So can you remember that? Can you say it back to me? You can't, right? Exactly.
Nope.
So that's the power of domain names. The reason why they were created was because humans can't remember numbers, you know, like phone numbers, for example. You can remember maybe 10, I mean, or who knows? And they created these domain names. So the internet regulator was like, okay, domain names are important, right? And now all these websites, Amazon, you know, they're creating, you know, Yahoo, which were back then, they were big. They're like, okay, .com.net is too powerful. Right. And it was run by a company called Network Solutions. So they decided to break down Network Solutions and say, OK, .com and .net is going to be owned by one company. And it was renamed VeriSign. And then Network Solutions that was running .org as well was a company called PIR, Public Interest Registry, that became the steward for .org, which is a nonprofit. So .com.net became VeriSign and .org became PIR, right? And in the end, VeriSign became a publicly traded company, one of the most profitable companies in the world. Their biggest shareholder is Warren Buffett, right? And people, you know, he always says, I don't invest in tech. I'm like, no, dude, yes, you do. You invest in monopolies. Yeah. And he's always, you know, so VeriSign has a monopoly agreement with the regulator ICANN. However, the US government, again, we go back to Al Gore and Bill Clinton when they set up ICANN, what they wanted to do was increase competition, right? So what they said was, okay, we need to put some price caps on .com, right? So it was under $8 back then. So when you go to GoDaddy or any other, you know, retailer or what we call a registrar, VeriSign gives them a wholesale price, right? So let's say $8, which is kind of close. And then they sell it for 10, 20, 30, or whatever it is. However, again, with these registrars, they make most of their money through hosting and website building and emails and SSL, not the domain name. So they use it as a kind of, it's very similar to the ink business, like the printer is not that important, but the cartridge is where they make the money, right? So then people were saying, okay, .com.net.org, why shouldn't we have more? There needs to be competition. You know, it's part of your charter and bylaws, ICANN. You need to do more. So then they came out with the, I believe, the 2004 round, which was .info, .biz. There was a few of them, right? And then they closed the window. And that was 2004. And then people got even more excited and they're like, we need more, right? So back in 2008, it was an ICANN Paris meeting. I heard that they were going to open up the entire World Wide Web for new domain extensions, right? It's 2008. And I attended my first ICANN meeting in Egypt, in Cairo, in 2008. That's when I started. Right now, it's 2024. So it took 16 years to launch. But again, you're dealing with a regulator, and then you're dealing with competition, right? So for 4 years, from 2008 to 2012, CAN wanted to expand the internet, and they needed to create this, what we call the applicant guidebook. In other words, this is the application. You have to fill it up, and you have to meet certain criteria. And again, let me go back in time, and 2008, again, Spotify, no Spotify, and piracy on the internet, no good. So I thought to myself, this freaking Facebook thing is quite genius. Why can't we do what .edu is doing, right? So a lot of artists and creators, you know, they have all these numbers, right? So like an ISNI number, the International Standard Name Identifier. It's like a bunch of numbers. Like, who remembers their ISNI number? Or for a recording, their ISRC, their recording number for a specific song, or the works, their ISWC, right? And there's a whole list, you know, IPN numbers. So I thought to myself, the internet and these domain names are unique. So just like I told you, the IP address for Google, right? When you type it in your browser, it goes there. You just know it as google.com. Or when you go to the store, app store, you just download Google, the word Google, right? And it's the Google app for search. I thought to myself, why can't we just make, because it's unique, we can say TaylorSwift.music, right? And Taylor Swift is unique. There's only one TaylorSwift.music equals the ISNI number, right? Which is her International Standard Name Identifier that no one can remember, right? And by the way, 95% of artists and creators do not have ISNI numbers. And ISNI numbers are not verified either, which is another problem, right? And I'll go deeper into the identification problem, like how difficult it is. Even in the United States of America, we had elections. What was it? This week? Last week? Forgotten. It seemed like ages ago. Right. No, I'm just kidding. And in some states, they don't even accept photo ID, right? So there's this discussion about using photo ID, right? Even in the United States of America for voting. And I come along and I say, everyone's going to get verified. You know, we need to check out your ID, your verification, your passport, or whatever it is that we to show that you are who you say you are. Because ultimately, this is the key. If you want to get paid, right? If you want to get paid and you go to a bank and you want someone to wire you money and you say to the bank, hey guys, I want a bank account. They say, oh, we trust you. We know who you are. We're going to open a bank account, right? Nah. No, the bankers know what they're doing. They're going to say, hey guys, we need to know who you are. And we need to know that you're a good actor. Give us your ID. And then you open up a bank account and they know who you are, right? And that's how you get paid. You want to open up a PayPal account, or they need to know who you are. KYC, know your customer, KYB, know your business, right? You cannot open a bank account in America without them checking out your paperwork, right? So I thought to myself, okay, now we have TaylorSwift.music, right? Or you know, whatever artist.music, which is unique across the world and it's global. Okay. Then you can attach their ISNI number and every single identification to them. And then you can attach all the copyright under those. However, the issue is people want to get paid. They want to collect royalties. They want to collect, you know, money from gigs or whatever it is. People need to know that they're real, or that the merch that they buy or tickets that they buy, if they're on their official page, they know they're legit. So that's kind of the goal. But we need to start from the root, right? So I say at the root of the internet, like .music, the root. So when you're talking about copyright, everyone's focused on copyright without solving the identity question, right? You need to solve identity on a global level. You can't just say, oh, each country has their own, yeah, they do have their own laws. But if you want to solve for identity, you have to solve it globally, right? So ISNI, for example, is the International Standard Name Identifier. ISR, you know, all those codes are international standards and they're global.
Sure.
So, so verification becomes important, and we have to start thinking like a bank. So we know who you are, so you can get paid, you get verified. And the other great thing about it, we ensure that no one, let's say only Bobby Osinski can get BobbyOsinski.music. Another guy called John blah, blah, right, cannot get your name, right?
So, which I just did, by the way.
So there you have it. There you have it. Yeah, so, right. So that's the beauty of this, because a lot of artists, and I'll give you an example, a beautiful example. We had a famous artist, a few of them actually, go to GoDaddy or somewhere else to register their .music, and they're freaking pissed. They're like, it's not available, and they're pissed. And they go in our customer support, and they're angry, right? And one of them, really famous artists, they're like, those fans, they took my name again. Ah, what am I going to do? Someone took it. It could be a pirate. And sends this message in customer support. And we're like, don't worry, mister, you know, we've got you protected. So what we did was we created this algorithm of the top 50,000 artists and brands in music, right? And again, we used a whole bunch of factors. We used like your number of listeners on Spotify, number of subscribers on YouTube, Instagram. So it was a combination. And we had to cap it somewhere. So we said top 50,000, right? And this person, again, you know, his band has over, you know, 15 million, you know, listeners on Spotify. It's a pretty big artist. It was like, what? You guys actually protected my name? And he said, I had to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to some person that took my name. And again, if you look at BruceSpringsteen.com, it's not owned by Bruce Springsteen. Some squatter got his name, and it's live on there. They're running ads, and they're anonymous. They're hiding behind privacy. You look at JustinBieber.com, someone took their name. You know, SkylarGray.com, someone took her name, and it's for sale on that page. So we wanted to solve that problem. Again, you can't solve the identity problem without solving identity, right? So you have to look at all these factors, right? And then you're going to ask me, I know you're going to ask me, you're going to say, who gets Elvis.music? Is it Elvis Presley or Elvis Costello? So we're like, okay, so we need to solve that problem. Who gets John Williams? The John Williams or the other 30 John Williams on ASCAP and BMI? Because there's 30 other songwriters on there. So we're like, okay, we need to create some rules so it's logical. So the algorithm says Elvis Presley gets Elvis.music, right? So that's what it says. So we reserved it for Elvis, right? The big Elvis, right? Nothing against Elvis Costello. I love Elvis Presley. So sorry, Costello. So that was one of the naming issue is like key here, right? So if you want to solve for copyright, then we can talk about the black box and all these things where people don't even know they've got money that's owed to them. Again, it's an identity issue, even with MLC. They don't know who to pay, right? If you don't answer the question of who, like how will you pay it, right? The ones that have resources like the big publishers, right, and the major labels and everyone else, they've got their ISNI numbers, they're professional, and again, when you go to Music Brains and you check out the database, you can actually see that 95% of the artists, I think there's 2 million artists on Music Brains that are represented, only 5% have an ISNI number. And again, ISNI is not even verified. So the issue is we're talking about a metadata problem, right? So we're going from identity to like songs, and songs are copyright, right? So if you don't solve for identity, how can you solve for copyright? And then copyright has more problems, right? And then we've got AI it's a great time to be alive in music, that's for sure.
But you know, you just answered something here. Last week, I think, is when I got my .music domain, and I was pissed because you have to jump through some hoops to get it.
Did you get verified?
Yes, I did. Yes, okay. But it took a while for that to happen. And I'm thinking to myself, why? What's going on here? It's never that difficult. But you just explained it. There's a reason why you're going through that, and it's you.
So I'll tell you something else, because people think we're doing something easy here. This, what we're doing has never been done before. Even when you look at social networks, like even Instagram or TikTok, they don't verify everyone. Not everyone's blue checkmark. Under 1% is blue checkmark, right? So we're saying 100% blue checkmark, right? And then I told you the issue that even in the US, even in elections, they don't ask everyone for ID, photo IDs, right? We're saying, and again, we had some issues with Illinois, right? So we had some issues with you went through the verification. You just use your smartphone, and it's hard if you use your laptop, by the way, or your desktop. But if you do a smartphone, it's easier. Same with your business. And we basically verify you within seconds, right? We're getting better at that, right? So we've had people from Portugal. We had over 100 countries being verified. Over 100. Of course, there's problems, right? So this is something that's never been done before. But going back to .edu and the genius of Zuckerberg with the .edu email address, we cannot do what we're doing today without AI, right? We cannot do it. 2-3, and you're saying, why did it take so long? Well, if we want to verify everyone, doing it manually is not scalable, right? Today, yeah, sure. It's scalable, right? So yeah, there's going to be some issues where people may not look the same as their photo ID and the biometric fails or you know, when you're, and again, even for know your business, you have to show live, real time, your paperwork, right? And sometimes the camera doesn't focus, right? And then it gives error. So you know, the technology is getting better. So it's over like 90% success rate. Obviously, you know, there's some aggravation from the other side. But ultimately, when we tell people, and that's why we go back to the celebs that are coming in, that come in really angry, and then they're like, holy crap, you guys are protecting our names. Like, no one has ever done that before. And then there's other issues where we're talking to labels, right? And they're like, the artists and the bands don't want their dog. They don't really care about dog music. And then you talk to the artist and they're freaking pissed. They're like, who the hell from the label told you that? We want our names. It's our brand. We want it now, right?
Yeah,
like, you know,
of course.
And again, it's a small minority that are saying that. And ultimately, it's kind of, and you alluded to it, it's a communication thing for everyone on why we're doing this, right? Because ultimately, when you're looking at a website, like Dot Music page, for example, so you want to know that when you go there and you buy merch and you buy, you know, a ticket to a show or the artist's biography, and that's kind of an interesting thing because we had discussions about, okay, so in these smart speakers, right, and you ask Alexa, hey, when, you know, give me the biography of Bob Dylan, right? And the next thing you know, where do they take that biography from? You know, and obviously they take a combination of Wikipedia and some other places where it could be edited. And in fact, there were occasions where people would say, oh, Bob Dylan died, or, you know, they would write, you know, and you know, garbage in, garbage out, and it comes out. So what we're saying is, if you want the authoritative source of information, it should come through the actual artist. So we created these two new products. They're I'm sure you've seen them. One's called the Smart Badge, and it's basically a QR code, right? So with your name, .music, you get this smart badge, and it's a QR code, and you can place it on your photos, on your email signature, on your videos. So when people scan it, let's say it's on Instagram or whatnot, and they can scan it, it goes back to your smart page on .music, which actually says, hey, this was actually a real photograph that came from me. It's not some AI-generated photograph, or this content is legitimate. It's come from me. So it's actually kind of a check that it is legitimate and it's not AI-generated from a third party. So that was the one thing that we wanted to create. How do we create kind of like a verified IMDb for music? And we go back to where the actual brand owns their name and their domain name. And the beauty of the domain namespace and domain names that, in fact, they are databases, right? So when you go and register any.com, right, you have to tell VeriSign that runs the database for .com, who the registrant is. In other words, who's the owner of the domain, their name, or if it's a company, their company name, their address, their email, their phone number. And guess what? What happens when you get paid? Like, isn't similar information is asked, right? Like, who are you? Like, where do we send the check, right? So where it got me really interested, because it's global. The problem is it's freaking global, right? So when you're dealing with Spotify launching in a different country, they launch in a different country years down the road, right? We're launching in like 200 plus territories where 50% of our customers don't speak English, right? So Google Translate's our best friend, right? So our thing is customer support, right? And it's a different language. We've launched globally on the same day with every single country, and we're verifying everyone in 100 countries. And it's kind of really, really difficult, right? But the other thing that we're doing that's quite game-changing is if we have the verified IDs that are controlled by the ID holder, right? Let's say you own bobbyosinski.music, right? We can create this thing called ID.music. And if you saw when you created an account to get verified, you go through ID.music, right? In fact, with ID.music, it's an actually identity provider, right? So ultimately, the music industry can use this, we call it the IDP, just like when you log into apps and websites, hey, log in with your Gmail, log in with your Facebook Connect, log in with your music ID through .music, which basically gives all these providers in music enormous power where they don't have to verify everyone, right? So a collection society could say, hey guys, just log in with your .music and, you know, just give us permission to get your information and we'll pay you, right? So that's kind of where we're going. We're like, we need to solve for identity, A. We need to solve for identity globally, B, because music is global. And even with YouTube's global, right? So in every country, you can stream a song on YouTube.com, right? So if we don't do the right things from day one, we're screwed, right? And that's why people are, you know, again, people are asking, oh, why... You know, it's not as cheap as a .com. I'm like, do you know how many layers we have to deal with to get us to this point? Like, we've got the verification, it's global. Then we're creating the identity provider. Then we're creating the smart badge. Then we're creating the smart page. So all of these come with your domain name. It's pretty much free. You don't pay hosting. You don't do anything. It's kind of the greatest deal in history that no one knows about, right?
It's time to get the word out.
Time to get the word out. And ultimately, now you figured out where we're going. Right? That's where we're going.
Definitely.
So the first year is about getting everyone, especially the famous artists, to get their names so we don't have to deal with questions about, oh, someone took my name. You know, it happens, right? So we did get thousands of huge artists, you know, in the system and obviously major labels. We went through all the organizations and all the big trade associations. We made a press release on the first day and it was everyone. It was like from IFP to the International Confederation of Music Publishers to the NMPA to the RIAA to the Grammys to the International Music Council, which is the United Nations for Music. There are like 1,000 organizations. Everyone's on board. But this is the hard part. You're going top down, right? And the problem with the internet regulator when they started this .music thing where you could apply for it, and going back in time again now, because your question was, why did it take so long? It took 4 years to create the application process. And in 2012, it was only 30 days to be able to apply. And it was about $250,000 to apply. And you had to meet the criteria to do it, right? And there were 8 applications that applied for .music during those 30 days. It was Google. It was Amazon. It was
Okay. So it's people with a lot more juice than you.
Yes.
And you won.
And, okay. And this is the funny story, right? And I was young when this started, right? So I went and pitched this idea to the music industry, right? And of course, the first thing they're going to say is, oh, this guy's a squatter. It's a young dude. Like, this guy is a Greek dude. Like, what's he doing? Like, we don't know him. And again, I don't blame them, because again, when you're young and you're dealing with an entire industry, they'll be like, okay, they're always going to be thinking, okay, this guy hasn't built trust. We don't know him. He's an unknown commodity. So the idea was great, but what they did was they put together 42 organizations and they applied for .music on their own as a community, right? So what it means, community, there's a commercial application and there's a community application when you apply to the regulator. A community wins if you meet the criteria. And if you don't meet the criteria, it goes to an auction. So imagine going on an auction with Google and Amazon, right? They would like, for .web, there was an auction for $130 million, which is crazy. At the end, VeriSign won .web, which is the guys that own .com, but that's another story. So they went in, and this is an interesting story. I got a call and they asked me, are you still going to go for .music as a community? Because they put together a request for proposal and they put their own coalition together, right? And they did it on their own. And I said, okay, I'm not going to quit. So I spoke to some lunatics that actually believed in me to go against the traditional music industry. And we're like, okay, let's form our own coalition. Let's go all digital. Again, this was 2011, right? So I spoke to a few people, Jeff Price from TuneCore, and, you know, yeah. CD Baby, and I got, you know, Reverb Nation, and we got all the digital distributors, right? We got the International Federation of Arts Councils and Culture and Council, culture agencies, basically was ministries of culture from governments, is this association. And we got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of communities. They weren't the established music industry per se, but it was the entire digital that represented them. And if you remember, like the Orchard, again, I guess they got bought by Sony, yeah. right? And then Ingrooves yeah, got bought yeah. by Universal. So we had all these digital distributors that represented major label artists as well. So we went in and no one knew we were going to apply for Dot Music as a community, like the entire industry. And what happened was they went in as a community and they failed, right? And they failed. They didn't meet the community status. And the reason why they failed community status, and I knew they were going to fail because I pretty much wrote the in the request for proposal, I wrote what they did. I'm not saying they copied, but they probably did. And what happened was when you define the community, they define it as 42 organizations. The problem is the music community is not 42 organizations. It's thousands and thousands of organizations, right? And I argued, hey, guys, Reverb Nation is not included. CD Baby is not included. TuneCore is not included. Ingrooves is not included. The Orchard is not included. All these organizations that represent, you know, hundreds of millions of artists and amateurs as well is not represented. So the criteria is you have to represent a majority of that community, and they failed them, right? So they failed them. And then I was like, guys, we should be together on this, right? Let's put together the policies. Let's do it the right way. Let's come together as a community and kick some butt, right? And that's what happened. The entire community said, okay, it's too much of a risk for us, for Google and Amazon. And again, Google won .search. Right, Google One.app, Amazon One.book, right? And if you remember, Amazon started with books, Google is in search. Obviously, music is the most popular thing on YouTube, and it's big, right? It actually creates a lot of eyeballs and hits. So we're like, okay, we need to work together, guys. We need to work together. And again, the music industry has a lot of smart people. Like, they're very smart, right? So we all came together, and we're like, okay, yes, we're all united. Let's freaking do this, right? So we all got together, and anyway, fast forward, we beat Google, we beat Amazon. It was a great moment for the music industry. And people say, you know, we don't come together. Yes, we do come together. Like, when it comes to it, the music industry comes together and we work together, right? So that's why I'm very positive about Dot Music, because once people understand what we're doing here, and even on the privacy angle, a lot of people, I get a lot of emails. And that's why D.Dot Music is a nonprofit. We don't even hold, you know, any of that data, like the driver's license or all that stuff is private, right? So we always say, like, we don't keep that data. All we get is a yes or a no. You're verified or you're not verified. We use a third party. Yeah, you went through it as well. Yeah.
Well, we have to wrap this up here. So how can artists, songwriters, producers, how can they apply for Dot Music?
Okay, so it's quite easy. You could go to your favorite registrar, and you could go to registry.music/registrars, or simply you can go to register.music, so register.music, and you can get your name. So again, the requirements are not that stringent, even though we require verification, because that's the pillar of everyone getting paid and getting where we want to go. And the requirements is you have to meet this thing called Nexus. So if it's your songwriter name or your artist name or your band name, then it has to be that. You can't get some other person's name. So you have to have some association and connection to that name. And you have to go through verification. So apart from that, the rest is easy. And we'll be continually adding things. So at some point, Bobby, you'll be able to communicate with other Dot Music holders, like a social network. So people will be able to communicate with you. We're going to add a follow button. And again, guess who's going to get those emails? You're going to get those emails. So again, we're trying to empower everyone, but we cannot launch so fast because again, our team is like just like 10 people, right? And we're growing. We need to train people to go through customer support. And we can't, our growth is so fast right now that we cannot catch up, right? So, so that's why we're saying right now in the first year, we just want to get everyone their names, get verified, and then we'll be adding features to all the products. And again, it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and more features with the domain name, because ultimately we would want people to communicate with each other. We would want people, let's say I'm looking for a cellist, they would go to cello.music and they would find someone that plays the cello that has a .music. So that's kind of what we want to do. It's like a dating for musicians and then for fans as well, where they can find the artist they like.
This is very cool. Thank you so much for just spending your time and explaining all this. We really did a deep dive on this, and not only about .music, but everything else, about how we got to this place. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bobby. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for our latest online classes at bobbyosinski.com. This is Bobby Osinski. I'll see you next time.